This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Hundreds of children who were separated from their parents after they crossed the Mexico border are still not reunited with them. In fact, some of those parents have already been deported, meaning they're not in the same country as their children. The administration's zero-tolerance policy was reversed, but that was after several thousand children were taken from their parents and put in shelters and homes and institutions across the country. While there have been some joyous reunions, it's clear that some children are traumatized. Meanwhile, the Justice Department has toughened its policies for accepting asylum seekers. Julian Aguilar has been covering the story as politics and border affairs reporter for the Texas Tribune and joins us once again on Radio Times for an update. Julian, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. And let me give out the number to our listeners, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Julian, are people still coming to the U.S. border seeking asylum?
Yes. You know, the Border Patrol and Border Protection, CBP, they released their statistics for the last quarter for the previous month. So the last time we had some updated statistics, they were for the end of June. And by then, you know, even when the zero tolerance or separation news had trickled down, there were still quite a few numbers of people coming up. You know, from the same time frame, the fiscal year 2017 to 2018, it was about the same in several categories, if not a little bit of a bump. Officials say this always happens in the spring, summer months. But this came after the Trump administration had, you know, cited a zero tolerance policy as for a decline over the last several months. But it's just really kind of hard to tell what parents are hearing. Obviously, this is worldwide news now, so they know that there's going to be a chance of separation. But even some of the families that we've spoken to, either here in El Paso or down in McAllen or Brownsville, that had to be separated and had to jump through all these hoops and are in deportation proceedings, they said at the end of the day it was likely still worth it. You know, even if they have a chance to stay here while their asylum case plays out. Now, granted, these are just anecdotal stories, and
sure,
it's hard to tell what, you know, what the tens and thousands of families are thinking, or the folks that might still be set on coming here. But with respect to the policy and just tradition, you know, these are the busiest times, and we get press releases every single day about Border Patrol finding people in the brush, or about Border Patrol having to find, you know, having to rescue people in the water, or a stash house here or a stash house there. So the activity definitely is continuing.
Because it seemed part of the zero tolerance policy was to send a message, which is that if you come to the United States, you could lose your children. But it sounds like what you're saying is, for whatever reason, many people did not get that message.
Many people either did not get that message or weren't really clear on the message. Or what happens, and the government has said this for years under President Trump, under former President Obama, that, you know, the smugglers, the coyotes and the smuggling networks, that they don't tell the truth, or they just tell flat out lies in order to convince these people to keep going and traveling north, which is has happened for years and years and years. So that's also part of the problem. You know, under President Obama, after the 2014 surge began, the State Department began a campaign, you know, to try to get the truth of what was happening, the trickle down in Central America and Mexico. And traveling down there a few years back, you know, it was really difficult to digest, mm-hmm, whether or not these folks were paying attention or whether the news was reached. And again, you know, the smuggling networks and sort of the rumor mill gets involved. But I would doubt if, even with the zero tolerance policy, that we saw, you know, even a 50% decrease over the next few months as, you know, the summer months continue going into the fall, which are usually the busiest times.
You had a story about a woman named Yvonne Berciago Prieto who, and I'll just summarize just a little bit of what you write, but she believed she was American. She has three kids who are U.S. citizens. She has over many years crossed the border multiple times. Now she is in custody. And I wonder whether her story, though, tells us about what a complicated reality is on both sides of the border, and even where policy contradicts or interacts with people, and how people can end up getting sort of caught up in the system, even if they believe and have documents that prove that they might be a U.S. citizen.
Right. Well, it's a very unique case. She, up until a week ago when I spoke with her via telephone, and she's in the Sierra Blanca detention facility, she swears that she's a U.S. citizen, that her mom told her she was. She was born, they used a midwife. They got a U.S. birth certificate, which she used all her life. And it's not uncommon in border culture. I mean, I know friends that are U.S. citizens that have Mexican passports, because the Mexican government will give you dual nationality as long as one of your parents is a Mexican citizen, a Mexican-born citizen. And it happens so often. I mean, I've seen people with U.S. passports and Mexican passports and other countries as well, but especially on the border. Right. And that happens sometimes when folks, want their kids born in the United States, but they also want them to be educated in Mexico. In Yvonne's case, she said that it was because they had a family business and they wanted to make sure she had a legitimate right to it, and also because of the education. But what happened is that she also, with that Mexican birth certificate, she was apprehended at the border after one of her cousins had turned her in, because she cooperated in prosecuting one of her family members for sexually abusing her youngest child.
Wow.
And so but it also gets sort of caught up in the Trump administration's crackdown, because the charges were dropped. She has three U.S. citizen children. She has a presence in the United States. She has W-2s. She has a driver's license. So what her attorney is arguing is that under the previous administration, the immigration judge would have administratively closed this case to allow her U visa to be processed. But what the Attorney General Sessions did in May is he told judges that they couldn't administratively close cases anymore, so this one remained open, which led to her detention. So it's a double-edged, it's a multifaceted story about the border culture, but also how, one mistake or one miscommunication or one case of severe confusion with a birth certificate could ensnare somebody in the Trump deportation detention system that's going on right now.
You mentioned U visa. That is, you get a visa if you're a victim of a crime or you've helped with the prosecution of a crime, correct?
Exactly, yes. And Yvonne did in this case when her youngest child was sexually abused. She aided in the prosecution, and the case file includes the El Paso County District Attorney's Office attesting to that cooperation.
Do we know how many children have not been reunited or reconnected with their parents or their family?
So that's, it depends on which day you ask, I guess. I don't mean to be flip when I say
sure.
that. It's just that the government does so many numbers out there, from 24 hours to the next. My colleague Emma Platoff has done an excellent job covering the court order aspect of this. And as of the July 26th deadline last week, there were still about 700 children that hadn't been reunited. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, the government deemed them ineligible. It's a pretty broad category. Either the parent had some criminal charges and they were deemed a threat, or they couldn't verify the familial relationship, or, a host of reasons why they were deemed ineligible. And that number had shrunk to a little fewer than 600 a couple days later. And now what the government is admitting is that there's about 400-plus children who can't be reunited because the government had already deported those parents. And the latest news to come out of the administration as of Thursday was that they're asking the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, to take the lead in trying to find these parents. The government's going to give them some information, and now you have a nonprofit civil rights group that's now charged with doing what a lot of people think the government should be doing.
Well, yeah, let me just stop on that, because the ACLU has essentially sued the government over these children, and now the government is saying we need your help in reconnecting these children with their families?
Yes, that's exactly what seems like it's going on with respect to the latest update. And there is another conference call status update for Friday afternoon, so again, we'll see how that process is playing out. But obviously, they missed the deadline for the tender age children, for the children that were younger than five, which was a few weeks back. And I think leading up to the July 26th deadline, the government had said, look, we missed this deadline for XYZ reasons. And I think they were laying the groundwork knowing that they weren't going to be able to reunify the rest of the children ages 5 to 17 by the July 26th deadline. And obviously, a week and a day later, we see that obviously wasn't the case. And so the government has been laying the groundwork for why they weren't going to meet these deadlines for several weeks now.
the parents who were deported, the 400 or 450 parents who were deported, were they deported against their will, do we know? Or were they deported thinking that they might at some point get reconnected with their children, or they just were happy to go back home?
That is, that's an excellent question, and it'll depend on who you ask and when you ask them. Several outlets, including the Texas Tribune, has reported that some parents were, the term they would use is coerced, that they were told to sign some papers in order to get their children back, and what they did is they waived every right to stay here, and they ended up getting deported. Some were told that they would get reunited with their children, they would be deported together. So it's, again, it's really sort of a mix and match with so many people. You can't just, you know, have one blanket explanation for everything. But whether they knew or whether they didn't, I think it'd be at least safe to say that it's a mixed bag, that some did and some didn't. Again, it's anecdotal, but the folks that we speak to here, they say, yeah, it was worth it. I got separated, but we're reunited. We're going to fight our asylum case. And then you get a small handful of others that say, you know, I've been in detention so long, it's not worth it. It's driving me crazy. So I'll volunteer to get sent back. And a lot of immigration attorneys say that that's what the government wants to do. Even if you seek asylum at the port, between the port, it doesn't matter. They want to detain somebody so long that they sort of break their spirit and they wave the white flag and they say, you know what, I was fleeing violence in Honduras or El Salvador or poverty in Guatemala, but this is too much to be in here. It's not what I thought was going to happen, so just send me back and I'll deal with it. So there are cases of that happening as well.
And meanwhile, you've got children who don't know where their parents are, who in some cases believe for whatever reason that their parents abandoned them.
Right. Yes. We've written about that before where you have a 5 or 6 year old. There's a woman in El Paso that finally got a hold of the social worker, and the social worker says, no, your little boy thinks that you're mad at him, that you abandoned him. So he doesn't want to talk to you. And again, if you're sitting in confinement separated from your child or even with your child, but you still have minor children in the country you left, and that place is very violent and you're constantly worried about what's going to happen. I can't imagine that anxiety wouldn't also drive somebody to say, you know what, send me back. It's just so much uncertainty knowing what's going on either with my child in detention away from me or my other minor children in a country that's, you know, plagued with violence. So I just need to go back to be with them and, you know, either start over, either just give up and say, hey, I'll just try to make a life for myself in this country or, you know, whatever their future holds for them.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Julian Aguilar, and he covers politics and border affairs for the Texas Tribune. And we've called him up a couple of times since the children separation migration border policy was in effect. It's that zero tolerance policy was lifted, but there's clearly an aftermath to all that confusion. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any thoughts, comments? We certainly do want to hear from you. Julian, the Trump administration has really toughened or tightened up the guidelines when it comes to asylum. What does someone have to prove in order to be able to be accepted for asylum in the United States?
Right. Well, that was part of the whole revamping of the immigration system. The Attorney General, he issued an opinion with respect to domestic violence and gang violence a few months ago that immigration attorneys and immigrant rights groups are saying is going to affect tens of thousands of would-be asylum seekers. And the main crux of his argument was saying just that fleeing violence wasn't enough to get a legitimate asylum claim. You know, in order to get an asylum claim, you have to prove that you're being persecuted for being a part of certain specific groups, you know, certain social groups based on, you know, political expression or gender or a host of other factors. And a lot of what was happening before is a lot of families, in the case the Attorney General took up specifically, it was a woman who had fled an abusive domestic violence relationship. And but he, in essence, said that that's not enough to prove that the government can't or won't protect you. He said, you know, it's a shame that a lot of these countries are experiencing this, but that on its face is not enough for you to be able to get an asylum claim. And some people think that that's also going to spread over to gang violence, which is the main reason that people are fleeing a lot of Central American countries, mm-hmm. specifically El Salvador and Honduras, with the MS-13 and Gaya de Ocho, you know, civil war that's still raging there. So I think a lot of people, even though they knew that there were some changes to the asylum system coming under President Trump, I think they were sort of taken aback at how broad this change was and how it might affect. And I think people forget that even before these changes, it was very, very difficult to get an asylum claim granted. So that means that even fewer people are going to be able to get here and seek asylum. And there was some data released by the Syracuse University, the TRAC program over there, which does a lot of really excellent open records work, and that the credible fear approvals had plummeted. Credible fear is the first step in seeking asylum. When you ask an asylum officer, either at the bridge or at an immigration office here to hear your case, usually the first step is like, okay, this person has a legitimate fear of returning back to his or her country. But right, those first-level approvals have dropped off tremendously.
A question from Amanda. What are the consequences of the Trump administration missing these deadlines or this deadline? Have there been consequences? I know some judges have been very frustrated.
Some judges have been very frustrated, and they've said, no, you can't do what you're proposing to do. But what we've seen so far, because this is all developing over a matter of the last few months, is the judges are setting deadlines saying, okay, you have to do this by this deadline. You have to do this by this deadline. You know, it'll be interesting to see what a federal court judge, you know, says this is your ultimate deadline. And if you know you need to come to me the day afterwards and tell me where you are, what, if any, punishments will be handed down? You know, under this administration, we've seen a lot of courts, a lot of groups, you know, admonish certain policies, and they seem to just kind of brush it off and move on with the next project. So it'd be difficult to see, especially with something related to immigration. I mean, we've seen how much pushback there's been from DHS and administration officials over the separation policy and the harm that it's done. Obviously, it's reverberated around, you know, this country and around the world about what's going on. But these hardline immigration practices continue, and a lot of people in the United States support these policies. So in that respect, the president and his administration thinks that what they've done, as controversial as it is gaining the approval of at least a lot of Americans.
Final question for you, Julian. What is the status of the wall?
Well, we've all seen in recent days that the president has threatened to shut down the government if there isn't a good amount of funding for his wall in the newest DHS appropriations bill. I think they have till September to figure that out. He's threatened this before. The administration has gone around that by using existing money. There's currently a project to build an additional 33 miles of wall, of levee, of fence, whatever you want to call it, in the Rio Grande Valley. There's a project ongoing here just outside of El Paso in Santa Teresa, New Mexico, going east out toward Arizona, which is also using existing funds. So I think the simplest way to put it is that what the president wanted and campaigned on is this big, beautiful wall, and to find some sort of funding mechanism either through Mexico or Congress. That is not happening the way he wanted it to play out. But the administration is using existing monies or sort of going around environmental policies, waiving all these environmental policies in order to fast-track the wall in sort of fits and starts in some places. So,
well, Julian, we have to say goodbye to you. I appreciate you joining us once again on Radio Times. Julian Aguilar of the Texas Tribune, coming up, defining collusion.